The following is a meeting with disciples with His Holiness Srila Satsvarupa Das Goswami on January 2nd, 1993 in Gitanagri.
We didn't anticipate there would be so many people. But that needn't be a cause for disappointment. But my intention was that this would be a time, this is a time I'm trying to make myself available for my disciples. I haven't come to this temple just to visit, certainly not to get into the management, and not to visit, as I do, other places, as a sannyasi, to serve the devotees by speaking what Prabhupada has taught in his books. Although it may include that purpose, but it's specifically for being with my disciples so that they can ask me questions. Therefore, I don't know how many of you are going to stay for the next few days, but if you are going to stay and you want to see me, this is, we have to see each other in this forum, in the presence of others. But it should be in the presence of, it is in the presence of people who have something very dear in common, our family relationship. So we should be able to talk things in intimacy, even with the numbers. You can write me questions. And I'll try my best to be personal about it. So let me just start with the one question that was given in today. I've read in Among Friends over this past year and heard you express in lecture tapes how you don't always feel we avail ourselves fully or properly of what you can give us, both as a sannyasi and spiritual master, whether in personal meetings, from your books, or other ways. Could you tell us something of what you would like to hear from us? When is a personal meeting beneficial for both spiritual master and disciple, and not just a dump session? How can we reciprocate with you in your writing in substantive ways? I mean, how can we receive better what you give us in your books? Not just writing you some pretty words of appreciation for them. So there's sort of several questions here. I think the reference about what was read in my books or tapes, especially there was one talk I gave to a few devotees in a room, a few disciples in a room when I was in New Mayapur. But what I was expressing was kind of building up in my mind, that devotees were to, and I was writing about it in Among Friends when I was in the Caribbean, those issues. But devotees were often coming to me with their material problems, money-earning problems, family problems, and asking me to solve them. Now, my complaint is not that people have problems or that I hear about their problems. As expected in the material world, there will always be problems. And we look to the spiritual master for help. But it should be for spiritual help to get through the problems. Or, another way to put it is, by hearing spiritual help, maybe we won't have so many problems. We won't be so entangled if we listen to the spiritual instructions, or if still, from our past karma, we have to go through entanglement, his instructions will ease our minds. Because in the words of the Avanti Brahmana, who was, you remember the Avanti Brahmana, he was a very selfish man, and then he took sannyas, and people used to mistreat him as a sannyasi, partly because he had been such a bad man before, they wanted to vent their feelings toward him. Oh, now you're a sannyasi, who do you think you are? And they used to spit on him and abuse him in so many ways as he practiced his meditation. He was very tolerant at this stage in his life. And his thoughts are like a philosophical section of the Bhagavatam, and really the conclusion that he makes is that all suffering is due to the mind. It's not really due to karma. It's not due to God. It's not due to the other people. It's just due to my mind that takes these things in this way. And then he goes on to say how the mind is godlike in its fierce power to rule over everything. And so this, the spiritual instructions will relieve the mind from making us suffer. Therefore, I was feeling that the disciples were not really that interested in that kind of discourse, to talk about Krishna. That's even going beyond talking about how to control the mind and how to understand that you're a spirit soul in this material world. But actually, to talk about Krishna, that was rare. Now, the ideal kind of relationship is described in 10th canto, chapter 1, verse 4. Nibbatatire se rupagi yamana pavosha jakchotra manoviramat. Especially in the purport, Prabhupada tells how a spiritual master and disciple, they're like in their own world. They live in their own world, which is the transcendental world. And Prabhupada says things like, the disciple and the spiritual master, they don't have anything to do but talk about Krishna, and then such disciples are not interested in newspapers and the worldly activities. They just want to talk about Krishna. And when they talk about Krishna in this sublime relationship, other people, they hear about it and they benefit too. So this would mean that, I say ideal, the disciple in such a case would have to be finished with all material activities, and the spiritual master has to be avail himself in some substantial way, and they just talk about Krishna. But so, although the external setting of that is not possible, but we should keep that in mind, at least, that it's not something else. So this is kind of the background. Therefore, the question is, if that's, I've already described what was not so satisfactory, then can you tell us what you would like to hear from us? When is a personal meeting beneficial for both spiritual master and disciple, and not just a dump session? Again, I feel like I want to qualify before I say what I like in an exchange, because it may not be that may be like a luxury to speak of what's very satisfying to me. One has to work with the disciple on the level the disciple is at. I don't want to make this presentation if people are afraid of expressing themselves with their problems. But at the same time, yes, I would like to be a little more open about this and try to improve our exchanges so that they're really more satisfactory for both of us. Okay, what was my so I said I want to qualify it first, and that is that what is a really satisfying exchange from the spiritual master's point of view? It might be any session or any talk where we actually touch on the instructions of Krishna and the acharyas. And both persons are the disciple. Disciple tends to be the inquirer, and the guru is who's giving the knowledge. Although it can sometimes be reversed, but like we heard last night with the mouse and Nimai, sometimes this mouse was giving him some solace, but. both are feeling spiritual energy in talking about Krishna and Krishna consciousness. However it may, from whatever angle it may begin the talks. You might think that you might think like that. That I don't wish to be a burden on my spiritual master. I have some time to meet with him, and I would in person or in letter or in group, and I would like. Of course, I would like to have some get some spiritual directions, and if I would like to ask questions that are enlivening to him at the same time. Not that he's answered it so many times or that it's he considers it a material inquiry and so on. I know myself in approaching Srila Prabhupada in that way, I would, in times in between, I would think and think of questions. What were the questions that were in my life that were there already that I was seeking guidance on for understanding Krishna consciousness and my own progress? So that you think about it is one thing. Prepare yourself for that, for the meeting in which you will make inquiry. Have faith and trust. Otherwise, then there's nectar in the exchange when there's faith and trust, when the person is actually asking in that way. And friendship is there too. One has to be rightly situated in order to have a spiritual exchange. Like in that verse I mentioned, Nibbata-tarshir, it says, everyone can hear about Krishna and they'll like it, except the persons who are killers of the soul, the meat-eater and the killer of the self. So this indicates that persons who are grossly disqualified, they won't like to hear from the spiritual master the topics about Krishna. So we have to, in order to improve our exchange, we have to improve our lives, to at least be trying sincerely to reach spiritual life. In that Nibbata-tara share, Prabhupada described, or Sukadeva Goswami describes, those who are liberated, well, they're in the best category. They're free of all material concepts and just want to hear about Krishna. Like Maharaj Pariksit. If he asked any questions on a lower level, it was just for others' benefit. But then there are persons who are not liberated, which we can, in general, say ourselves. They're qualified, too, because they want to be liberated or they want to be Krishna conscious. And then he says the topics of Krishna are so nice that even persons who are sunk in material life, if they're not envious and blasphemous, they also like to hear about Krishna. But it would seem like a disciple should be in the category of striving for liberation. I don't mean impersonal mukti, but striving to be free, to develop love of Krishna. So that's one thing that makes things better in our approaching the spiritual master. I'm pleased when I hear that people are really trying to improve their spiritual lives. They're already doing something, maybe going through difficulties, and they give me a chance to say something relevant. And and I know that they will listen too. And and they value that this is a special person who they're talking to. Let me try to give you just some random examples, thinking of exchanges I've had. Think of an example of a woman devotee, say, who's not married, maybe was married or not married, but is not married now, and is growing older and wants to be married. So this is causing her some distress. So she expresses to me that I'm, first of all, there's some real honesty, that I'm, this is my problem, as you know, and it's causing me continued distress, and I feel lonely, and makes spiritual life difficult. So now, as a sannyasi, you're trying to serve the devotee. My attitude will not be that I actually think it's very unfortunate not to be married. But rather, to be married will be the source of many difficulties. So you say there might be commiseration from an ordinary friend who would say, oh yes, it's a pity that you're not married, and so on, and what can be done to get married. But if I can point out that, first of all, I do sympathize with the loneliness that you feel, and you see some others who are married and that they appear to have nice companionship, and it would be nice if you had that and not be so alone. But the ultimate truth is that that's not going to bring you happiness anyway, and you shouldn't feel so sad about that, and you should turn to Krishna. So that the spiritual master, or I don't want to call myself a spiritual master, but in our relationship, I would want to be able to preach like that, and I do have that conviction about, say, marriage. And it is like, you could say it's an ideal instruction, but if the disciple says, well, I don't want to hear that. I want to hear if you, do you know anyone I could marry? It's also my interest that such a person could get married if possible, and I could suggest, well, maybe there is someone else who could help you do that. Not that I'm against it, but we have to be situated in the ultimate truth, the absolute truth, which is that, well, I'm glad to hear, you can say later, oh, I found a husband, a very nice person, and we're going to get married, and it's really going to work. So I say, and congratulations, I'm very glad that you're going to get married, and I hope that this gives you what you're looking for. But I know that that's not the ultimate truth. Whether they get married or not married, they still have to seek shelter in Krishna. So a disciple with whom I would have a satisfying exchange would hear that instruction from me and be pleased. It might be a little hard to take at first, like those prisoners in the prison with Haridas Thakur, and they said, oh, you're the great saint. Yeah, give us some blessings. He said, yes, I bless you that you can always remain in the position you're in now. And they were disappointed that, why are you preaching like that, and that we should stay in prison? He said, you misunderstood. I'm not saying that you should just stay in prison. But in this unfortunate material condition, you've developed some renunciation. May you always think like that. And then they appreciated what he said when they understood that he's on a deeper level that he's speaking. So to have a person like that who doesn't have the same interests everyone else does, and either superficially says, yes, I wish it would be nice if you were married, or tries to give us some material cheering up and so on, but who says the other, and we'd like to hear it, even if we can't follow it. We were reading Rishabhadev's instructions yesterday, that the spiritual master shouldn't get angry with the disciples when they cannot follow. But still he has to speak about the point of renunciation. So those who want to hear this truth and are trying in some way to reciprocate, this is one example of a pleasing exchange. And honesty is always disarming and refreshing whenever it occurs, whether it's spiritual master disciple or disciple to spiritual master. So I always appreciate that. But it's a relationship, of course, in which there should be submission and desire to take instruction, or else what's the use? where's the actual relationship of a spiritual master and disciple, unless that real deep trust is there to either take direction, or if I'm unable to take it, to desire to take it, and to see this person as my well-wisher. And the spiritual master sees a disciple as a sincere soul, hampered perhaps in so many ways by material conditioning, but sincere, sticking to Krishna consciousness despite all, and trying to be a devotee over the years, and keeping a relationship with the spiritual master. Not superficial, artificial, there has to be consistency for it to keep up. It's if we don't have any contact for 5 years, and then the disciple, out of some inspiration or sense of duty, wants to again have a substantial relationship with the spiritual master, and they try something, and then again, if they fall apart for many years, it's hard to keep up the touch, the intimate touch that makes relationships sweet and personal. That makes friends friends. It's very hard to have a close friend with whom you really don't get in touch with for a long period of time. Because if you really like the person, somehow spontaneously you keep in touch. Moving on, it's a good question, I think. How can we reciprocate with you in your writing? Not just from pretty words of appreciation. Well, in one sense, I do all I can when I write the book, and then I might say the rest is up to you. What more can I do? But as for what I definitely do respond. When someone writes me a letter that's not just pretty words, but really seems to touch on anything, I, as an author, I get encouraged, and I cut it out, I keep a file. Not for publicity reasons, but just for myself, when sometimes I'm feeling, oh, this writing isn't important, I should do something else. I look at some of the letters of devotees, that what they've said. So I do get encouraged. Substantive ways. So what I'm saying is, I don't know what to advise you. It either touches you or doesn't. I know ways in which it does. The things I've written do touch different devotees, and I can't say, well, here's one thing, here's another thing, it can affect you in this way, it could affect you in that way, as if I can talk you into appreciating the books on different levels. But I know some devotees do get that benefit, and it naturally, since I put so much into it, that definitely touches me and pleases me, especially if somebody says that I'm in this part of the world and I don't get to see you much, but I feel that I'm with you all the time because I'm reading your books, and they tell me different ways in which they feel that I'm with them in the books. So that's, then I feel very encouraged that when I take time to do this, I'm actually doing it for the readers, and they are reciprocating. The reciprocating is just that you take something there and it's meaningful for you, and then if you let me know about it, that's nice too. At least I can tell you that I consider it a very important area of relationship and of shiksha. There's this concept of shiksha and diksha. We have a relationship of diksha, which should include shiksha, not just a ceremonial priest of who gave initiation and linked you, but who continues to give you shiksha. So when the shiksha relationship is there through the writing, then I feel enthusiastic about that. because the other is so hard, it's so hard for me to give. And Prabhupada even says, it is sometimes available and sometimes not, the vapu or personal, really, but the other is always available. So when someone shows that it is available, that they do see it as personal and helping them, then I'm very encouraged. But actually, I feel inadequate on my side, and because there's so many disciples, and I cannot give them as much as they want. They need so much and want so much. And I feel unable to give them. But if I'm able in any way, it would be in this way, where I can give everything. Oh, just like in this meeting, I couldn't be completely open, I couldn't be completely intimate, and I can't be so reflective as I could be if I'm alone. And then, but by this miraculous method of communication, which Prabhupada himself availed himself of, he would sit alone in his room and speak into the dictaphone, and then everyone could get it. So to be able to do this, I can feel that I am doing something. It's in that way. I'm very grateful to Prabhupada and Krishna for this ability to do this, and I'm really trying to do it for all I'm worth. I realize as I'm getting older, my time is limited. I'm not just thinking time of living. That's certainly true. But Prabhupada, he's an extraordinary example. We can't expect to always... He writes to the end, he was able to write. But many times, I know people, older people, devotees and sannyasis, after a while it gets hard. So you try to write and you get a headache, or you try to write, you can't remember, or something like that. But I'm very grateful that I got this opportunity. And I just want to keep doing it as much as I can and finding new areas to express and to help the devotees and reciprocate and leave something for them, directions all the way to the topmost levels of Krishna consciousness. Now, I don't think you would ask this, but I'll just answer the question anyway. Someone says, well, why do you think it's so important that you write books for your disciples? It's the very area that Prabhupada addressed. I answered this question in the first book I published in ISKCON, which was a handbook for Krishna consciousness. First of all, I said that Prabhupada told me to write, so I'm writing. But also, the principle is, he said, the parampara shall be expanded and expanded in the future, and it can get sweeter. And so, I say I'm grateful because although I'm on such a low level that I myself am struggling, Krishna has arranged that this itself can be a valuable sharing or message to other devotees who know that struggle can be overcome, and that honesty and is always preferable to dishonesty, and that there is hope of getting out of this material state of so-called Krishna consciousness and actually entering the appreciation of Krishna in Vrindavan. So the fact that a struggling person's perceptions and attempts can actually be valuable is a great gift for me to be able to do something which will be valuable to you. So personally speaking, if you find it valuable, then I become very happy. I think I'm like validated in the eyes of Prabhupada. Sometimes I think, or even write, this is a crazy thing I'm doing. Somehow I still have such great faith in it. And then when I see the faith is actually borne out, then how could I not feel very satisfied and want to give more and want to do more? And I do like to see disciples advancing, spiritually advancing. I'm not envious of their advancement, but when they actually advance, it's very satisfying and pleasing to me, so I love to hear that. By their humility, by their taste in Krishna consciousness, by their enduring difficulties. I guess what I'm, one thing I'm saying here is that, from my point of view, to be able to service so many people is very difficult, and in a human sense, I get taxed, and then I'm not able to do it so well. I may get irritated, or I may deal with something in a short way. So that's not pleasing for you, and it's not pleasing for me. But if when I give my attention to each person, if you're sincere and I'm sincere, then there will be a good quality, and we'll realize each other's shortcomings, the human shortcomings. We won't see them so important, and try to get the nectar out of the situation. I have to try to see the sincerity, and you have to try to see the Krishna coming through the spiritual master. And again, the writing enables me to do this. To be even alone, to not even be to not even be exactly reciprocating with any one of you, but to be alone, and to be honest with myself, is a way to make a universal to make a connection with everybody in the world. And because we want to see someone who's sincere, who's not bluffing. If there's some spiritual realization that's genuine, and we're attracted to it, we want it. If there's some knowledge that's actually arrived at, so that kind of in integrity that I can gain when I'm alone to write, then I immediately can give it to everyone very happily. And when someone sees that, then I become more happy, and we have that Hadini Shakti exchange. I become more happy, they become more happy in our relationship. And therefore, I feel there's no fear of what they call becoming spiritually selfish, or becoming too self-absorbed, Babaji, and so on, because I have so many permanent relationships with so many people. It's not possible that I could just do something and keep it to myself. But what can I give in the general flow of ISKCON that isn't being already given by somebody else, in terms of a program, a Food for Life program, or another public relations program, or even the so many mainstream programs. If I can find my soul and tell the truth of my soul and my relationship with Prabhupada to some people, not everyone is interested in this. So some people, they want to become disciples. For that reason, they like to hear. Then it's very nice. And again, the question is, well, that's, we do get inspired hearing about your approaching Krishna, but how is that relevant to the level we're at and what we're doing? And it can be, and it is. And when that happens, then our relationship is going nice. We had an initiation on Govardhan Pooj Day in Vrindavan, and it was quite maybe about six people got initiated. It was held in Prabhupada Samadhi for the second year in a row. It held an initiation in Samadhi Mandir, in front of the big Prabhupada Murti. And this year, there was such a representation of people from around the world. There was a BBT editor for Czechoslovakian books, who works in Sweden and in Czechoslovakia. There was a reinitiation of one devotee who is from Morocco, North Africa, distributes books with great risk to the Muslim people there. And I just can't remember all the devotees, some Sankirtan ladies from England, and it was so different, different devotees. And I was so thrilled to call out their names and to tell the devotees who were attending, the Vaishnavas there in Krishnabhavan Mandir, quite a few people were attending the ceremony, to tell them about this devotee and what they were doing. And I felt so proud to be serving these devotees who were doing such varied and nice services, some of them very simple things, and some of them spectacular things, like selling books to Muslims, and some of them maybe more quiet and simple, but all. So I'm saying that I'm not unable to appreciate what the different devotees are doing, and I like to reciprocate with them. But when the relationship really seems to be working, is they say, yes, when I go and distribute these books to the Muslims, or when I go out on the street in London, or when I'm staying home taking care of my children, or translating the books, I think of your instructions, and my relationship with you is very central. And then I feel I want to extend myself to them as they're coming forward to me. Yesterday in your initiation talk, you made a very nice point about the positive side of avoiding the 10 offenses. We hear that the mad elephant offense is to blaspheme the devotees or the spiritual master. So the antidote is that to worship and serve and develop relationships, loving relationships with them. Sometimes I've heard you quote from Srila Prabhupada's letter to Lynn Ludwig, where he explains how devotees in the beginning may not be able to show love out of fear of Maya. I find this in myself, a kind of selfishness. Save yourself, self-centeredness. How can I make the transition towards being able to share more openly with fellow devotees without becoming a mundane socialite? At least you have this desire to break out of that kind of thing. In a sense, I was just talking about that myself, in my relationship with my disciples, wanting to do it in a genuine way that was natural for me, to give love and to give something valuable to them, and saying the ways that I felt I couldn't do it due to my limits and due to the numbers and so on. So that's true of every devotee. We have to find a way that we can do it. Be loving and helpful to others. So partly it's just an attitude that as you go about your activities, to do them with a sense that I want to contribute to this society, or maybe this temple. That in the temple where I live, I have certain duties, and by doing these duties, I'm contributing to this temple. And I get great satisfaction from that. And in that way, I'm part of Prabhupada's family and movement. Don't have an artificial idea of what it is to be open and to be loving. It has to be something that you can actually express by your attitude. Not in terms of how many people I contacted today or something like that. Whoever you meet, tell them about Krishna. It's in the natural way of the people who we do contact with, and try to do something that will benefit all the devotees. Not just that smiling or shaking hands or patting backs or making prostrations. Those are exhibitions of loving exchange. But if that's all there was, it would just be mechanical, or as he says, mundane socialite. So then if that's not the main way to show it, then it has to be some deeper way to show it. So that's by your actual service and by your actual attitude as you do that service. That it's not just for myself, but I have some desire to be with devotees and to associate with devotees and to serve devotees. And then how you, there should be some tangible expression of it, but that will vary. That will vary. He's being very honest, because actually we have a very strong selfish tendency, we all do, as part of our conditioning, to very advance to be a loving person. So it's something that we have to overcome. But you have to search within ourselves to find a little spark of it and to try to increase it and to try to do acts in that way. My point is that our most basic practice of Krishna consciousness should contain that, and then it will extend into recognizable expressions of it. But if you just, so often it may happen, like flash in the pan devotee, he appears to be on a platform of really spreading Krishna consciousness or sharing Krishna consciousness, but it's not really, it's coming more from he wants to be famous and so on. So after a while it dries up. And Prabhupada, in the Lynn Ludwig letter, he defended those neophyte devotees who she said don't show love. He said, but they're giving up Maya, and it's a very great thing. You should appreciate them. And Prabhupada, he appreciated the devotees' surrender and sacrifice. Just to that one person should save themselves and try to be a devotee. He saw that as not like a selfish thing, but a wonderful thing. And don't be so hasty to criticize them just because they're not on the level of Rupa Goswami and loving everyone. So go on trying to perfect your Krishna consciousness, and as you do, more and more it will start to radiate to others. I think ISKCON, in the state it's in now, like the most desired and precious premium or precious thing that we're looking for in others and ourselves is good examples or persons or genuine realization, even of the simplest kind, and honesty and so on, real rather than false. And so this is so much sought after, and if anyone has it, then he'll be giving it to others just by his example. The devotee who wrote this is going out every day and distributing books in so many difficult situations, so he shouldn't worry that he's being so selfish. If you after such self-sacrificing activity all day, if you want to be alone a little bit and read some books and not always socialize, you're entitled to that because you're doing so much in the spreading of Krishna consciousness. By finding the genuine essence of Krishna consciousness and bring it into my life, I'm doing a social act in ISKCON of the highest kind. And so these that I do to do, it may appear to be selfish to some people, but it's not. Srila Prabhupada gives us, through nectar devotion, vision of three types of devotees. Kanista sees only the deity. Madhva, etc., Uttama, etc. In devotional service, what stress is given to serving the Vaishnava? It is easy to serve the Guru, but what about the serving desire for each other? Isn't this one of the main secrets of advancement? We see so many from S. Radha Rani, Srimati Radharani, through disciplic succession. Now, Jayananda, Mother Gauri, Mother Kalini, etc. What about the serving desire for each other? Isn't this one of the main secrets for advancement? Yes? I think I already was touching on that. That's almost like a rephrase of the other one. Not to be selfish, but to serve the Vaishnava. Not only the Guru. Yes, someone serves the Guru, but only quarrels with other Vaishnavas, even with his own God brothers and God sisters. So this turns out to be that he's really not serving the Guru, but in the end he brings the Guru pain by fighting with other members of the family. So Vaishnava Seva is part of Guru Seva, or is very important. Could you please elaborate more on the nature of Srila Prabhupada's pastimes at 26 Second Avenue and your relationship to them, particularly the moment when you first call in at the storefront? I remember in your writings questioning whether these pastimes were eternal. Do you have any further comments on this now? While I'm in the United States this time, I hope again to go to 26 Second Avenue. And of course, I like to think of those pastimes not only when I'm there, but any time. Are the pastimes eternal? My understanding is that they're not eternal, in the sense of eternal would mean that there is a planet, a spiritual planet, where the activities go on. It's like Krishna comes here, he stays for so many years, very limited time of a human life, shows some activities, and then he's gone. But these are called prakat, or manifested activities, and then they're gone, and not here anymore. But they continue in the spiritual planet. So some of the incarnations of God, they have eternal pastimes, but some of them, they just come to this planet and give some instructions or life examples, and they don't go back to a planet and do them. They're just for this time. But still, what they teach is eternal. They teach about those who are teachers. All incarnations are usually some kind of teacher, by example or by precept. They teach about the eternal world of the Lord and the pastimes of the Lord. So in that sense, they're eternal. The spiritual master, like Srila Prabhupada, his activities at 26 Second Avenue and all the activities in this world, they're all part of Lord Chaitanya's Leela. So Lord Chaitanya has eternal Leela. As we read in the Chaitanya Charitamrita with his associates. So one who is a pure devotee of Lord Chaitanya, he goes and he can associate with Lord Chaitanya within Krishna Loka. There's an area of Lord Chaitanya and his pastimes. You can go there. Or you can go to Krishna's pastimes, and then your eternal relationship with your spiritual master will be in his eternal form. I spoke about this in the first class I gave in the series called The Life of Prabhupada. I don't think I'll do it here at Giranagari in the reduced form. I talked about the two forms of the spiritual master, and I said that when I first began to hear devotees talk about saying or hinting or that actually in the spiritual world Prabhupada would have a different form and it wouldn't be like it is in ISKCON, I was disturbed by this and didn't like it. And one reason was it was presented in a speculative way. People didn't really know what they were saying. But also just the idea that I should think of him not being the way I knew him and so on. But now I'm starting to understand better that I do have an eternal relationship with him, but it's in a different form, and I have to qualify to understand that relationship. And so now, as I say, it doesn't trouble me that it doesn't make the meditation on the pastimes at 26 Second Avenue less sweet or vital. We always remember our Guru Dev and how he picked us up from material life. We're eternally indebted to him more than to anyone. Because he was the one, not Krishna. When he came, or Rama when he came, but they came and they did their pastimes, and wherever we were, we kept suffering and evolving life after life. Somehow their nectar didn't reach us. But when he came, the Gurudev, then he's the one who actually picked this jiva up. So to think about that at any time should make us cry, and should make us feel so grateful. So that person, when we can know the eternal form of that person, our relationship with that person, that will be great perfection. So to remember him at any time, in his pastimes in this world, and how he saved this jiva, is never to be minimized. It's a wonderful thing. It's not something we read in the Bhagavatam about how Narada rescued Dhruva Maharaj, say, from his selfish attitudes. Because Dhruva was so great, became such a great disciple, he's mentioned in the Bhagavatam. But I'm not in the Bhagavatam, and you're not in the Bhagavatam. But still, it's very important to us that I was, my spiritual master came, and I was like this, and he saved me. It's very meaningful to us, because if that didn't happen, we would go on blindly, birth after birth. So each person is like his personal appendix to the Bhagavatam. In a sense, it is part of the Bhagavatam, the unpublished Bhagavatam, of how yet another soul was picked up by the pure devotee. Prahlada Maharaj says, I was falling into the ways of the demons, into the pit of snakes. My spiritual master Narada saved me. How can I ever leave him? So we think like that. And when there's occasion or we're in the right mood, we can remember 26 Second Avenue. Can't just turn it on, though, like a switch. Things change. That a program somehow or other finishes up, or you decide you cannot live in that way. Need to get married, and then you have to raise money, and it remains a kind of a golden past. But I'm just saying, somehow we have to, you know, get deeply into the values, spiritual values that are present in our life now. That's real spiritual life, is like that. Prabhupada says, even as you get older and older, you become more enlivened. Not like the materialist who gets more disappointed and just tries to remember good times. I've stressed somewhat on internal development, so that you feel happy and satisfied with simple things, essential, unchanging things like reading Prabhupada's books and chanting Hare Krishna and feeling the taste of chanting or trying to do that and being always determined to try to improve those things. And then it will always be new and the challenge will always be there. And then you'll still see, oh, this is a wonderful society. All over the world, people are being given a chance to come to Krishna consciousness. And it may be different than just seeing the pictures that, oh, we have such a wonderful building and such, and look at this group of devotees here, and I'm part of this movement. But it will still be, the essence of that will be there, the appreciation. That when we see how much trouble ISKCON has and how it has failed in so many ways, then we can't have that euphoria, but we think, oh, Prabhupada was so wonderful that he came, and despite all these odds, in the material world is so difficult to have a pure movement, but still, the Hare Krishna movement is continuing, and it's overcoming its difficulties. How wonderful it is that except for this, there would be just barbarian life all over the world. So that's like certainly an appreciation of ISKCON, but different than we have so many temples, we're going to take over the world, which may have been our attitude different before. Why give up all idealism and all positive attitude just because things change and you change? You just have to keep that alive by going to the sources of always refreshing, always new Krishna consciousness. And so if you see that's not happening, then yeah, you may have to change your life and not just let it die as happens. But you have to find it in a new way and not complain that, oh, now the leaders are all exploitative or now it's not possible. But you have to find it's possible. So getting back to the spiritual master, then that's something we can ask his advice on, how to do this, what to do, and then follow his instructions. When the spiritual master says something as an answer, it's not just that he's painting a picture like for a performance of answering a question, a well-balanced answer, and it just stands there for a while and then evaporates. But it's something to take to heart and to do. Instructions that aren't acted upon are not so valuable. So if we approach spiritual master like that, like with that question or any question, then we have faith and follow his instruction, we won't feel that way. With a sense of humor, even at the ways we were mistreated or the way we suffered or the way we enjoyed Krishna consciousness in our youth, we still turn to now the present with great enthusiasm and taste. And if we don't, then we want to find out how to do that again. It's natural that as we grow older and as the world changes, this challenge is always before us and it's new and it has to be met. So we have to face it. Maybe I used to get great enjoyment in Krishna consciousness by eating lots of prasadam. Many devotees say that. It's important. Not just the honoring prasadam, but being able to eat large amounts of Krishna. I was reading Rabindra Sarup's account of going to a straight edge concert. He said before the concert there's a lot of voracious eating of prasadam. So, but as you grow older you can't eat so much. You can't digest so much. So then that particular enjoyment has to be refined. Maybe you can enjoy by eating less. Or you actually see that spiritual life doesn't just mean to eat a big pile of halva. But there's something even more tasty than that, believe it or not. And so that's an example of replacing one taste with another taste. And it's actually an example of it being a better taste. We said the higher taste, that's our a vegetarian slogan, by which we mean don't eat meat, eat prasadam. But that higher taste can go higher and higher, not just that the highest taste is to eat vegetarian food. And that should be our progress. As not that we grow old and the body is diminishing and we can't eat as much, our enthusiasm is diminishing, we think ISKCON is diminishing. That's a typical syndrome for the materialistic person growing old and dying, and then he's dead means just that, not just that he's thriving and then one day he dies, but he just gets so narrow and narrow and less and less happy and tasting, and then he just dies. But a devotee, he's getting more and more Krishna conscious, and he dies in a different way, goes to Krishna. It's Maya's trick to say like that. Oh, remember how you used to be so thrilled to be the back to Godhead and see how ISKCON was spread all over? You don't feel that way anymore. So actually, it's because ISKCON is defunct, and you are now so entangled as a householder. So Maya, trying to stop our advancement, and we have to say no. There are still things, very nice things. Better than ever before. There were actually, if you think about it, before we were a devotee, we could never dream of the shelter that Krishna consciousness gives, that by remembering Krishna's names, how we're free from so much material suffering. So similarly, when we just joined Krishna consciousness, our concept of what it was to practice Krishna consciousness, we couldn't dream that we could reach a point where we would not think every day that maybe I'll leave the temple, maybe I'll become a non-devotee again. But we become steady and fixed. So as we were picked out of material life, and as we've advanced in such extraordinary steps forward, so there will be more. We don't think I know everything. I know what this religion is, and I know what I am in this religion, and there's nothing more left. But such quantum leaps as we've made, we will make forward more and more, bit by bit. So the spiritual master-disciple relationship is for that, ongoing sharing and relishing Krishna consciousness in newer and newer states. So it should actually be that the disciples grow up and with the spiritual master, they can be somewhat like in that verse, 10th canto, chapter 1, verse 4, where they're relishing, serving together and appreciating Krishna and Krishna's activities in a friendly relationship. Disciple is bringing things to their relationship which enliven the spiritual master. The disciple has all kinds of realizations about Krishna and ability to taste, and the spiritual master is amazed. Oh, this disciple is such a Vaishnava. I really, by his association, I get rid of all my cares, and he helps me to think of Krishna. What a wonderful association he is for me. And the disciple still, although advancing, is thinking, my spiritual master is such a source of inspiration for me. So it becomes nicer. Among things that become nicer, that becomes nicer. But we have to clear away our heavy anarthas and preoccupation with lower modes before we can have that kind of relationship. So if the disciples are always dragging the guru down to that, then neither he can be situated in the sublime, and they can't either. Well, disagreement is not forbidden, but it's so important to express things in the right way. Otherwise, even the righteous person with a righteous cause, when he or she expresses how the other person, the other party is wrong, and they do it in an avaishnava way, non-vaishnava way, then they lose their righteousness. And they can become more faulty than the person who is doing something so recognizably wrong. It's very, you call it etiquette, but it's not like material etiquette, how to use a knife and fork and so on. That in one sense it's really not so important. But it is important that our expressions be humble, gentlemanly, and Vaishnava-like. So disagreements, you can speak out, you can express disagreement, although even that is sometimes risky. Better not to do it. But if you feel I have to do it because of some cause involved, then with great trepidation I go forward, but do it very cautiously. Being aware that the way I do it is so important that even if I think the cause, that the truth that should be exposed and this person corrected, as important as that is, it is not as important as doing it in the right way in these Vaishnava circles. It's like the Hindus in India, that they want to establish the place of Lord Rama, so they blow up a mosque. And then all other mandirs, Hindu mandirs, they get torn down. So the expression can cause havoc, even though the cause is reasonable, or the cause has something good in it. And we have to be very, very careful like that, even to the point of that if you try to make correction by the Vaishnava methods and it doesn't seem to work, then what else do you have? You can't say, well, I tried to do it in the Vaishnava way, it didn't work. Get out the dynamite. Blow the person's house up, or whatever. Then anyone will see, they say, what happened? Oh, this person just made this violent act of aggression against the other and disregarded all Vaishnava behavior. But it was for this very good reason. But everyone will say, well, it doesn't matter. So we can't be provoked, we should be provoked, because ultimately everything is up to Krishna. I can't, if I try by Vaishnava attitude and dealings to change that person or to speak against that person's wrongs and it doesn't work, then what else can I do? It's up to Krishna. I'm not going to lose my Krishna consciousness. And this is unfortunate when both parties don't observe this. But if we stay on the Vaishnava level, Krishna will protect us. Vaishnavas can fight, but to fight other Vaishnavas is dangerous. The anger should be used against the non-devotee, as Narottam Das Thakur says. So I think I've used up a lot of time. I mean, not so much, but enough. Well, and so it looks like so many people are attending, we will have to have the slideshow in the temple. So if we leave Madhu Mangal alone for the rest of the day, he'll be able to get his slideshow together. Otherwise not. or even help him in different things that he has to do besides that. I hope I don't hear at the last minute the slideshow isn't ready, then I have to do something else. And help him. He said there's no slide projector or this or that, so help him get whatever he needs so we can have this. That will be our program tonight. And then tomorrow, it's nicer to have it here in one sense, but it's just too crowded, so we'll have to have it in the temple, I guess.
Some people are leaving.
Yeah.
Maybe
we can have it like this. And if you can try to submit some questions. Some of these questions were so nice that we were able to have a kind of intimate exchanges. And you can come up with some good questions. Or for questions or suggestions for topics and so on. We can do something to actually help each other. What time tonight?
5:30.
5:30. All right. Thank you very much. Thank you.